Hello, readers, and welcome to the Read Podcast, where we connect you with researchers, thought leaders, and educators on topics in reading and child development. Read is produced by the Windward Institute. I'm your host, Danielle Scarano, and during October, the WI and the Windward Institute are putting dyslexia in focus during Dyslexia Awareness Month. This month on Read, you will hear from four past Read experts on insights specific to dyslexia. This Read episode features Dr. Devin Kearns. You can tune into the full conversation on episode 5 by visiting readpodcast.org or on your favorite podcast platform. In this clip, I ask Dr. Kearns about reading instruction and dyslexia. So can you talk a little bit more about some of the common myths and offer research to dispel some of those myths?
So the biggest myth is that dyslexia is a visual processing problem. It absolutely is not. So the data suggests that it is a sound processing problem, that people with dyslexia have difficulty processing sound information and then linking the sound information to letter information, putting all that together to read words. But people think it's a visual processing problem because there are a couple of reasons. One is that kids reverse things a lot. Kids with dyslexia make reversals, which is to say that they'll write a B for a D and so on. That's the most common one. And it makes people think, well, they must be doing this because, you know, there's a visual component to dyslexia. But here's the problem. They've done studies now to show that if you look at the errors of good readers and poor readers make a lot more errors than good readers. And poor readers reverse things a lot. But good readers also reverse things occasionally because it turns out that B and D kind of do look the same.
Absolutely.
And so, and since they look the same, it's easy to confuse them, especially when you're a younger reader. So what's interesting is that as a percentage of errors, the percentage of errors that are reversals is about the same for kids with and without dyslexia. But it stands out that kids make these reversals, and especially stands out when kids make mistakes. They're making a lot of other mistakes, but we don't focus on them as much when we think already that it might be a visual processing problem. An example is called confirmation bias. You already think it is a certain thing. You find the examples and you ignore the other things. And so that's one reason we're pretty confident it's not a visual processing problem. Another reason we're confident it's not a visual processing problem is that when we ask people with and without dyslexia to do tasks that involve looking at figures that are reversed and so on, they don't have difficulty identifying the direction of them. In other words, if you give kids with and without dyslexia the same visual images, they can, and some of them are reversed, they can identify the correct way and the incorrect way orientation with the same level of accuracy. So that wouldn't be the case with visual processing. If they were actually having problems with visual processing, then we would show that we would have that difference. One reason that it's possible people think it's a visual processing problem but isn't is that I said B and D are easy to mix up because they look similar. And it turns out that humans are not particularly good at understanding the direction of things. We like things to match side to side, like it's called bilateral symmetry, right? You may have heard that beauty can be identified based on people's sides of their face matching up. And so we really are into, you know, as humans, we're sort of naturally predisposed to think about things being the same on both sides. So B and D being reversed is not surprising because we see those things as mirror images. For that reason, it's also not surprising that saw and was get mixed up because, you know, it's sort of the same thing with the reversal. The question is, why is it that those things get messed up? Like, why is it that those get messed up? It's because students are having difficulty linking the letter to the sound. So it's not so much that they can't see that that's a B. It's more that it's hard for them to remember which letter goes with which sound because they don't have solid sound processing skills. And so that's the reason we think, at least one reason we think, that it's not a visual processing problem, even though people perceive that it is.
So when you talk about sound letter correspondence, is that something that's manifesting in the brain? Are we looking at brain regions, brain networks? Can you explain a little more about that?
Yeah, for sure. So there's sort of three parts of the brain that are thought to be associated with word reading skill. And these areas work in one way for kids who are good readers and a different way for kids who are poor readers. The three parts of the brain are the inferior frontal gyrus that processes sound information, and the precentral gyrus actually is involved with motor production of sounds. And then there's a temporoparietal region. And for our purposes, I'm going to focus on the superior temporal gyrus, which is largely responsible for linking up two different things. In our case, letters and sounds. So it's sort of responsible for that. And then you have in the occipital temporal region, you have what's called the fusiform gyrus. Sometimes people call it the visual word form area, where people think that in a way we sort of store the representations of the words. Not exactly visually, but sort of like we know all the letters in them and we know what they say kind of instantly, because basically once our reading skills get good enough, we, as soon as we see a word, we know exactly what it is. So one of the big challenges for students with reading difficulty with dyslexia is that the part of the brain that involves the linking part, the spirit-temporal gyrus, seems to be underactivated in those readers, which is to say they just don't use that part of their brain as much. So that is one reason it seems to be the case that it's not so much that they reverse things, it's more that they can't remember which goes with which. And if you're a poor reader and you look at a letter and you're not sure, you probably are just going to guess because you're not sure. And sometimes you'll be right and sometimes you won't. So that's one reason we think it's not actually a visual processing problem, but is a sound processing problem.
So let's talk about some other myths.
Sure.
You're out in the education field a lot. Mm-hmm. So what have you heard that educators are expressing or parents as a myth?
So one thing that is a big myth is that we can improve kids' outcomes by doing a lot of cognitive training. So this comes in a lot of ways. I'll talk first about the most extreme form of it, which was something that was used in the 1970s, early 1980s, where some researchers theorized that you could improve kids' outcomes by doing sort of unusual things, like doing somersaults and, literally, and by crawling, hanging upside down from a bar, these kinds of things. And so they asked families to do a lot of really intensive things like that. It did not produce any positive results. And it was really hard on families. The people who ran this program were really demanding on parents. And it was so bad that the American Academy of Pediatrics in the early 80s basically issued a bulletin saying, this is potentially harmful to families. Like, it wasn't that it was going to hurt kids in general, but just the stress placed on families is so bad, it's not at all worth doing that. It had no effects. It seemed somehow special that there was something unique you were doing, focusing directly on the processing in the brain. And so it was appealing to people on that basis, but there aren't any data to support that. Another example is that people argue that there's some kind of visual processing involved in color. And so people have done things like using color overlays, like they will put a blue sheet on top of text and ask students to read it with that, on the basis that the idea is that if you have the color overlay, you'll read it better under those circumstances. The data do not support that either. There's no data suggesting that color overlays are a good idea.
What about even like fonts or lamps? What about those?
So there's this dyslexia font. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about that is the data don't support using this dyslexia font. But there's an important feature of the dyslexia font that is probably the reason that it works, which is that the letters are better spaced. So it turns out that one thing that's effective about a font that has a lot of space is that it's easier to read the word. Space meaning sort of their letters aren't as crunched together. And readers can profit from having better spaced letters, but it doesn't have to be dyslexia. It could be Arial or Times New Roman. It's really just the spacing, not the specific font, that makes the difference.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about effective reading instruction.
Sure, yeah.
I know much of your research focuses on high quality reading instruction.
Yep.
So what does that look like?
Yeah, so this is an important and in some ways a tricky question. So there are lots of things that kids need to learn. They need to learn primarily to comprehend, right? The goal of reading is to comprehend text, both because you need to learn things and to experience the world on your own through the world of books, right? And which is a really great thing for kids to be able to do. And so the question is, what skills do students need to have to do that, and how do we provide instruction on those, right? So in the big thing with reading comprehension is we need to provide students with strategies to help them read words. We also need to provide them with background knowledge that they might not have before they begin to read. And we need to teach them some vocabulary to help them when they start to read and give them strategies for learning new vocabulary on their own. We need to teach them how to make inferences and things like that. So those are all kind of key comprehension skills. But for many students, that's not going to be adequate. As a result, we need to provide foundational word recognition instruction. And so though the key elements of that are, the first skill is phonological awareness, the ability to detect and manipulate sound units in words. So if I say the sounds are k, a, and t, the word is
cat.
The word is cat, very good. And that kind of a task is important for learning to read. And so students can use that when they read. So for example, if you see the letters C, A, and T, you can look at it and you can say C says k, A says ah, and T says t, and I can put those together to say cat, right? And that's a key skill, is that phonological awareness, the ability to detect and manipulate the sound units. The second thing is decoding skill. You actually have to have knowledge of what the letters say, the sounds that they make, and it could be that A says ah. It could also be that CH says ch. It could be that IGH says I, and so on. So it's not just individual letters. You have to know those parts, and you have to know how to put them together to read words. So it takes that phonological piece and adds on to it letters, and the ability to do that decoding is really critical. And that's what's missing for a lot of students. So many students with dyslexia have a really serious difficulty with the phonological tasks and with the tasks of decoding, like figuring out how to say words they've never seen before. And so when kids have those problems, they don't end up remembering a lot of words. They don't get words into that fusiform gyrus as much. They can't remember them as quickly and accurately. And so they really struggle. And so those foundational skills, though, aren't taught sometimes.
So if I was an educator sitting with a group of students with difficulties learning to read,
yep,
what would I do?
Yeah, so you would provide instruction on decoding. You would teach. You would have games you would play, educational games, like really short, simple games to do phonological awareness. Like, okay, I'm going to say the sounds, you say the word, you know, goat. What's the word? Goat, you know. And those kinds of activities. And then we learn letter sounds, and we learn to put the letter sounds together to read words. Like I said, with you see the C, the A, and the T. And those skills alone are really critical. You want to then extend those skills into helping kids read sentences and helping them read stories. So it's not just the words alone, but it starts with word recognition or word reading instruction that involves what we call phonics. So that's basically what it is phonics. And many, many children need phonics. Some don't, but many, many children need phonics. The estimates are at least 60% of students need phonics in order to learn to read. And kids with reading difficulty often haven't gotten a lot of phonics instruction.
And this isn't simply just about exposure, right? This is a systematic, explicit approach to teaching phonics.
Yeah, that's right. So in some cases, people will do lessons where they'll teach, you know, C, and they'll find a book that has a lot of C words in it, and they'll have the kids practice with that. But they won't do it systematically. They'll kind of do, you know, sort of lessons from time to time, focus on different things. And as you're saying, that doesn't work very well. It has to be sequenced carefully, has to build from lesson to lesson. It has to be explicit in the sense that the teacher provides clear information and then gives students extensive practice. So it is a lot about practice, but it's practice based on having learned specific letter sound information.
Thank you for listening to this Dyslexia in Focus clip on the Read Podcast with Dr. Devin Kearns. You can listen to all past Read episodes, including episode 5 with Dr. Kearns, at readpodcast.org. Remember that advocacy extends beyond Dyslexia Awareness Month, and stay tuned for more learning and advocacy efforts by visiting thewindwardschool.org/WI. It is my hope that our community continues to educate and empower for students with dyslexia around the world. See you next month, readers.